Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with John Clements and our guest, Adam Spruder, manager at our Poway store, who is sitting in for George, who has got the day off today. We'll be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a special guest in with us today, along with Adams. Roy Wilburn, also known as Farmer Roy at our stores, is here, and he is probably one of the best vegetable gardeners slash farmers that I've ever come across in my career. You do some absolutely amazing stuff. And we're moving into as we're moving deeper and deeper into the cool season here in San Diego, vegetable gardening is going to start shifting. Or it actually has been for a few weeks now, where we're moving away from the warm season crops, the squashes and tomatoes and peppers and things like that. We're moving into cool season. And there's a lot that you can grow this time of the year.
It's your fall winter crops. Your gardens will look the most beautiful they've looked for months. And there's tons of stuff you can grow. And you're just buying time to get you to tomato season in February and March. But you could, it's cool season, so your water demands aren't there. Fertilization is less necessary outside of soil prep and maybe one other application. But, and they're quick. I mean, 65-day crops get them out and put another one in. You do that twice, start in September, and you're smack dab into your spring, summer stuff that, of course, we all love.
Now, as far as the soil prep is concerned, because that's one of the things that we try to emphasize with people when they're doing things, is you make sure you prep correctly because you get one time to do it.
That's correct.
And do it right the first time. Otherwise, it's going to be you're not going to have as good a success. The soil prep for winter gardening is basically the same as summer?
In my book, it's exactly the same. And be it tomatoes or lettuce or broccoli, basically apply you should be right now at the point where you're looking at that tomato plant and you should be saying, thank you very much. Thank you for giving me that. You're looking at your zucchini plants and they're probably all full of powdery mildew and time to yank those out and get all the crud out of your garden. But then we pull the plants out and then we prep the soil and we basically apply four things all the time. Mm-hmm. And one is compost. The other is composted chicken manure. GMB's got a great product. And worm castings. Never have enough good worm castings. And again, everything you put in right now is going to be there to help your spring stuff out. Probably the most important thing to apply to as you're prepping your soil is some sort of balanced fertilizer. Mm-hmm. Balanced, or we'll talk organic here. Balanced organic fertilizer, something where your three numbers are remotely the same, like a 444 or a 555 or a 465, something where the four food groups that plants like are there. And we apply those four shape beds or just leave it like that. You can do almost anything you grow in the fall and winter, you can do in containers. So this is a good shot for you if you live in an apartment or a condominium. You don't need a lot of space. And, in a little 6-foot, 1-gallon pot, you can grow everything. You can grow, a broccoli plant, a kale plant. But it's really important to get a nice, rich, organic soil media going because you only got one shot. If you grow cheddar cauliflower, you got one shot to get one head that's going to be beautiful. And if And the thing that affects size on all your heading type of brassicas are, you know, like cabbage and cauliflower and broccoli. You want the biggest head you can get. I mean, stay away from varieties where this tag says beautiful medium size. You know, go for big, because it's not as, it's easy, but you really need it in there. It's not like tomatoes or things in your spring garden where, you know, if you, you know, take a little bit off at the beginning, you're going to do further applications. And your tomatoes, if you plant in March, they should be there through September for you. And you put a broccoli plant in, it's probably gone 65 days if you do it right now. And then in November, December, you got to tack on a few more weeks because it's a lot cooler. Mm-hmm. But your gardens look great. I mean, they're big, green. Well, they should be anyway. A lot of green plants growing in your garden with food on it. Beautiful. And you're not going to see the powdery mildews, and you're not going to see the bacterial problems that you see in some of your spring, fall stuff. And then powdery mildew is a problem, but toward the end. But you can do... We would do every week. We're working with school gardens right now, a lot of school gardens. And every week or every couple of weeks, we'll plant some. And then that way they'll have something to harvest 65 to 90 days down the road. And just keep that going and keep that idea for your household. I mean, you could plant 40 heads of broccoli plants. But somewhere down the way, you're going to be making broccoli soup and giving broccoli to your neighbors.
The only reason to plant 40 heads of broccoli is if you're looking to save seeds and preserve that genetic diversity in the broccoli.
Yeah. Well,
maybe I think it was last year, Roy, you gave me a cheddar cauliflower.
Yeah.
Must have been a foot across. It was just a thing of art. And
that's what you're striving for.
Yeah. Well, it was beautiful. Now, to do that, are you putting a little more phosphorus in the soil?
Again,
to get
we
that
just
size?
Start with what the four the things I said and some balanced one. You know, if you're using organic balanced fertilizer, the numbers are relatively low. If if the numbers are 16, 16, 16, you've entered the world of conventional fertilizers, and that's, you could get some burn at that. Mm-hmm. But there's no need for that. You could. All these things are grown very easily within the world of organics.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, speaking of some of the cool season crops, the brassicas, cauliflower, and broccoli, probably the two biggest ones. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that I've seen over the years with those two in particular, aphids.
Yeah.
How do you, because once they get in,
so
you're
Yeah, right now, this time of year, I mean, the aphids come out, aphids and powdery mildew come out in early spring or late spring. And so you could plant broccoli from September 1st through March. I've even planted some in April here in Poway, and never have much of a problem with aphids on the broccoli. Cauliflower is kind of a drag, and then there's a couple others that we can go through that are definitely you gotta worry about. But again, get in, get out quick. You know, a 65-day broccoli, 65 days. That's a 100-day broccoli. That's 35 more days for the aphids to find it.
That's true.
And we'll just talk a little bit about it, but everybody likes Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm. That's another one that can be
and
tough.
The biggest drag about Brussels sprouts is they take like 110 to 120 days. So you're just sitting there and you're watering in it, and you know, 4 months go by, and then all right, you see all the stalks with the little buds on it, and you get all excited and you cut them off, and then you go, oh crap, what's this? And then you peel a leaf back and you go, oh my god, how'd they get in there? And then you peel another leaf back and how'd they get in there? And it's good protein for you, but it's not really what you
not
want.
Appetizing.
Yeah, but the only tools that I've used for aphid control are strong streams of water, and then some insecticidal soap. There's really no need to do anything super nasty if you're vigilant, if you're watching, you know, you're watching it. But yeah, things that are in the ground for 100 days, it's just that much longer. And so that means you probably get your garden ready this month, and 3 or 4 months down the line, then you're right around that time where aphids and powdery mildew start to rear their ugly heads.
Well, you're the best farmer I know. And it sounds like you're dissuading us from doing Brussels sprouts.
Well, again, what I would do is maybe 90, I mean, check your plants good, look under the leaves. But once those buds start forming, go ahead, give it a shot of insecticidal soap. Mm-hmm. It's a contact or, you know, again, strong streams of water. You can knock stuff off very easily. So I would say from that last month or whatever that you see the buds coming, when you're walking your garden and harvesting broccoli and other things, go ahead and give it a strong stream. You might not see them, but I guarantee you. I used to work in San Quintin, and we used to grow tons of tomatoes. And if you didn't grow tomatoes, you grew Brussels sprouts to sell to Canada. And you go out in the mornings and the airplanes are dropping Metamyphos bombs. And I mean, this is the most unorganic thing in the world to do. And it's just, you could, and that's what they were doing. I mean, they were spraying for that. You give you 3 weeks control and they'd hit them again hard. And anyway. But I don't want to dissuade you from growing Brussels, but be wary.
Okay. Be wary.
And the problem is it's there in the ground a long time. So early varieties with size, on no matter what we're talking about, is a key.
How about Romanesco? That
Romanesco
kind of magic between cauliflower and broccoli.
So I have experience with white cauliflower, orange cauliflower. There are green round globe type cauliflowers. There's one called Vita Verde. You can get seed. You might be able to get it. Oh, you have plants here now. It seems like over the years, the varieties I like are, I mean, you no longer have to buy six packs that say broccoli. There's actually names on it. And then there's the purple graffiti types, which could probably yield you the biggest heads of cauliflower in your garden. Wow. And then I'm a math nerd. I graduated mathematics out of UCSD, and Veronica Romanesca is a type of cauliflower that is nature's perfect form of fractal geometry. Look it up.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
So it's a spiral that creates a spiral that creates a spiral that creates a spiral. And you see them on all the cooking shows. And they're consequently a couple extra bucks a pound at the store. And most of those varieties of orange and green and all those are roughly 65-day varieties. But the purple graffiti and the Veronica Romanesca are going to take you about two or three weeks longer. There are now quicker varieties.
Let's hold that thought. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements. George has got the day off, so Adams Bruder is sitting in for him. And our special guest, Farmer Roy Wilburn. We were talking about winter vegetable gardens, brassicas in particular.
Many types,
lots of stuff. Now broccolini, that's a brassica as
that
well,
is a sister and probably a predecessor of our normal everyday broccoli. So I like working with kids in the garden. I think that's really important. Kids that work in gardens tend to grow up to be people that eat five times more fruits and vegetables, and we'll all say that that's a good thing. In the world of brassicas, you have the root type crops, and brassicas they're all members of the mustard family or the cabbage family. It's all the same thing. That's
the cruciform.
Cruciferous vegetable. You know why they call them cruciferous, right?
Because it makes a little cross on them.
Yeah, because if you screw up and you let the plants bolt and flower, they're beautiful yellow flowers like mustard. And If that happened in your garden, you either went away for vacation or you definitely didn't fertilize enough at the beginning. Mm. But you have a lot of the root types like turnips, rutabagas, radishes, also like wasabi and horseradish. But I buy my wasabi in a tube and my horseradish in a jar. But the kids see that, okay, well, hey, you know, there's stuff growing underneath the ground. And turnips and radishes are quick. I mean, that's great satisfaction for children in the garden. Haven't really met many kids that like radishes or turnips, but if they grow them over and over, they'll cook them up some way and they'll eat them.
There is one really fun way to grow the radishes is let them go to seed and eat the seed pods.
There you go.
They're like a nice mild flavored radish. There's actually a variety called Rat's Tail that people grow just for the seed pods. They have a real long seed pod. But
I have heard of that. I have heard of that variety. That's interesting. I never would have thought of that. I know young radish greens are really good.
Yeah, spicy
sandwiches. Very spicy.
Very French.
The trouble I have in my garden is the birds tend to just eat all the seed pods off too. You have to cover them to get any for yourself.
Yeah, covering your crops is important depending on the time of year. But then outside your rooted vegetables, you have your standard flowering types like broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage is a good one, and bok choy, super easy. Bok choy is super easy and super quick. That's like 50 days.
That is fast.
Yeah, they grow fast and they grow huge. And you could harvest them at any size you want. There are miniature varieties, but don't mess around with that. Get your big size. There's a variety called Joy Choy that's super big.
And, I knew her, Joy Choy. Joy
Choy. Happy. And, they are 90% water, but, I mean, they're staple in your stir-fry stuff.
With the bok choy, if you live in an area that gets a lot of frost, it will want to bolt at those cold temperatures, which you wouldn't really expect, but it will bolt really young at cold temperatures.
That's interesting because I always thought it was the heat that triggered them.
With the bok choy, it's both heat and cold.
Yeah, it's the plant saying help.
So you've got a window. You've got a weather window that you can grow bok choy in.
They grow great right now. And again, you could harvest it. There's different colored ones. But then there are your varieties of brassicas or variety of brassica that comes to my head where you actually eat the stem. Granted, you can eat the stems of all your broccoli plants. Mm-hmm. You could eat all the leaves off your broccoli plants and your cauliflower plants. You can eat the stems. You might have to like take a little peeler to it, but they all have the same taste. It's all delicious. But the big one is kohlrabi. And these brassicas go by another name. They're known as kohl crops. Mm-hmm. So kohlrabi is this huge goiter that grows on the stem. You think the plant looks extremely similar to your broccoli and cauliflower, but it will hopefully develop a huge goiter type thing growth on the stem. And that was the actual predecessor for coleslaw, kohlrabi. And kohl means cabbage in Latin, I believe. And like broccoli and cauliflower and kohlrabi and kale. And that's a good one. There's purple ones and there's white ones. And it's crunchy. It's not as sweet as it's kind of like a jicama crossed with a potato or something, you know. It's not really sweet, but it's very crunchy and it's great in salads. And again, it's the predecessor for bok choy.
And the leaves actually tend to be fairly tender on them as well.
I'd love
eating the leaves too.
Yeah, I mean, you can just go for the head of broccoli on that plant, or if you really want to wait, just keep it in the ground for another 2 months and they'll get all the little florets on the side, which would never interest me. I'd rather get it in and get it out and get a big, but all the leaves taste great. They all work. I mean, in fact, I know people that clamor for the leaves of all these things.
Sauteed broccoli leaves with a little bit of shallot. It's delicious. Yes. Wonderful.
I've never had broccoli leaves before.
Yeah.
Or cauliflower.
Just saute them like spinach.
Yeah.
Very.
Anything with garlic in them.
have to
crush. And with garlic, man, everything's great. Cardboard's great with garlic.
That's exactly correct.
Well, you know, speaking of garlic, now is a great time to put garlic into this selection of it is incredible.
Glad you brought that up. I mean, we'll get back to the world of brassicas, but I get asked a lot about garlic. Mm-hmm. What is the key to growing garlic? I think I know, but what do you guys, if somebody, you have actually garlic bulbs that you plant.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've only grown it a couple of times, and I really haven't paid that much attention to it. You buy the bulb, you break it up into individual cloves, and then you stick each of those individual cloves in the ground, and I do that, and I forget that I did it.
Yeah,
And then it starts growing, and when the foliage starts to dry out, then it's time to yank it out of the ground.
That makes sense.
It's good to go.
I think timing and soil temperature seem to be...
I would say yes, but I mean, it's good this time of year to do, you know, but again, you know, three heads of garlic at the store are a dollar. So, but you know, hey, it's sometimes we like to go through the process.
Well, and you had mentioned one time on one of our previous shows, grow the things that you can't get in the store.
Yeah.
Grow some of the unusual things.
Yeah.
The everyday stuff, just buy it.
Onions and potatoes are cheap.
It's like, tastes the same. Do you grow onions? Well, I mean, a bag of onions is like pretty cheap.
Yeah. But yeah, we have about 10 different varieties of garlic down there, and they all have different flavor profiles to them. And so garlic's cheap and easy to get, but there are some
varieties you just like to go through the process
that you're going to see that you just don't get.
Yeah.
Well, and I grow shallots because shallots are expensive.
Yeah.
And they mold very quickly if you buy them, you know, they turn moldy. So I like to raise shallots.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a good shelf life on those, but easy to grow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of those types of root crops are
expensive to grow.
And let me ask another question, because I get asked this a lot and I don't grow it. Are bunching onions? Bunching onions? Is that like scallions?
Yeah, I think so. But
they're from China. Bunching.
Yeah, onions. Yeah. Yes. They're from China.
Yeah, I've never done much with
those. I know that scallions are extremely easy to grow.
And scallions are used to grow. Chives.
Yeah. I raise garlic chives.
Garlic chives are the best.
Delicious.
Yeah, are the best. And again, another good heading one. I mean, you got your broccoli, cauliflower, but it's cabbage. I mean, everybody likes cabbage, just regular old cabbage. There is a variety that I'm partial to, and it's called Tender Sweet, and it's a flat wrapper, they call it, where it's kind of a flat head. It's not super round, but it's good for wrapping and, you know, your cabbage rolls and things like that. And all the other oriental stuff.
My grandparents used to grow a variety of cabbage. I don't know what it is, but several months ago, I was going through some old pictures and found photos of me and my sister in their garden. And we were kneeling down next to a cabbage plant that he had grown. And the head of the cabbage was the size of a basketball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was enormous.
Yeah.
And you never see that in stores.
Yeah, again, I think those are like the Copenhagen or something like
that. Well, that would make sense.
That would make that, again, those take you a long time. Yeah. So they grow probably really well up in, they grow well here, but they're probably somewhere up north in Salinas and something
My experience with the cabbages is the red cabbages get fewer aphids than the green cabbages.
That's interesting.
I'll grow them side by side, and the red ones tend to have a lot fewer aphid issues.
You know, another plant... not really edible, but we used to sell tons of it this time of the year, and it's really dropped off in popularity over the past couple of decades. Ornamental kale. Absolutely spectacular color.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous this time of the year for fall color. And you just don't see that much of it anymore. We used to sell thousands of that every year.
They look great with Iceland poppies and nice little combos of winter color.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of the thought that if you're going to grow it, eat it. But they're very ornamental. And there's lots of ornamental kales. And on that note, kale is the nutritional powerhouse of all the brassicas. I mean, they're all really good for you, but that is a huge nutritional powerhouse, just loaded with K. I mean, it's not good if you're on blood thinners because it's really high in K, and they tell you to stay away from stuff that's super green in those diets. So like AFib, if you have AFib and been been warned. That's why white cauliflower is really nice. That's why orange cauliflower is really nice. That's why purple cauliflower is really nice.
Hmm.
But the two kales that I really love, I'm half Sicilian, so I have to say this, is your Tuscan kale.
Or Loganado.
Or Lacinato, and it's also known as black palm kale, and it's also, and then the kids like it by another name, dinosaur kale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the same thing. But the name black palm kale kind of describes exactly what you're striving for. I mean, they're very dark, terse leaves. And as and on your kales and like your Swiss chards, you're peeling the older leaves off and you're watching it grow, and you peel them off, watch it grow. But over the years, I'm a fanatic for the red Russian kale. You got tons of plants here at Walter Anderson, I'm sure, of both of those. And the red Russian kale is a huge leaf and it grows quicker, and it's just less terse. It's more floppy, but it's stunning, and you can grow that super easy in a container. And it's got a red tinge to the leaves. As things warm up, the red tinge gets a little bit more. So, I mean, for something for your eyes, it's also really good. But, you know, I hope my grandmother's not rolling over in her grave right now. But the red Russian kale is really good. There are red Russian kales that are horrible, but go for the ones that they sell here. And that's what you want.
We'll talk about more winter vegetables when we come back. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements. Our special guest host, Adam Spruderer, and our guest in studio, Farmer Roy Wilburn. And we've been talking about winter vegetables, and we were talking about kale going into the break. And during the break,
she
makes basically kale salad. And the key to that is, and we were saying, you know, kale gets there's some people that love it and there's some people that hate it. I guess kind of like me and beets. But you make up a dress. If you're going to make a kale salad, you make up a dressing that's heavy on garlic and all, like you said, olive oil. It is really good. It can make or break a dish.
I think the reason people don't have an affinity toward kale is it can be kind of bitter. I mean, the larger the leaves, the older the leaves, they tend to be more bitter.
It can be.
And sometimes chewy. It's a little fibrous.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah. But again, try that red Russian kale. It's very tender. And the younger leaves are a little bit sweeter or less bitter. But
less bitter. And you can take the veins out of them if you so desire.
If you're like really have time on your hands, go for it. That's what they do on the cooking shows, but I don't get to that point.
Yeah, we don't usually do that either. But it does make a very, especially if you like a crunchy salad, it'll make a good crunchy salad.
Yeah, kale is it's just super nutritious.
Good plant. You wanted to touch base a little bit on fertilizing.
Yeah, so, you know, your spring crops, you'll tend to fertilize your tomatoes and zucchini way more than once, probably 3 or 4, 5, 6 times, especially if you're growing like indeterminate tomatoes. But there's really only one. I mean, again, soil prep is the key. That is the key, because you want those plants to get out of the soil quick and to start growing. And you're looking for, you don't want it to, you know, things that affect the size on your heads of broccoli are lack of water, lack of fertilizer, and insects such as aphids. So if you can keep it nice and juicy, keep it moist, which is easy in November, December, January, and February.
Mm-hmm.
And you're off to the right track. But what I used to do was we used to plant a lot of lettuce in between our broccoli and cauliflower. And your lettuce, you can get almost adult size romaine in like 45 days. And again, we're looking at varieties maybe in the 65 day range. So somewhere around 2/3 of the time through, you're taking the lettuce out, you're opening up the the row or your planting or your raised bed area. You're opening up. It gives you a chance to do any weeding that you might have. We want to make our gardens look good, right? And again, your fall winter gardens should look stunning. And so you do any minimal weeding, but then you just wait. You wait for that broccoli plant or that cauliflower plant to start. You just check it and you just start, wait for that little head that start to form. You'll see the leaves kind of coming to a point in the middle of the plant. And you go, oh my God, I'm actually going to get something to eat here somewhere down the line. And when that head starts to form, you kick it in the pants with something with high nitrogen. And the easiest for the home gardener is things like Alaska fish emulsion fertilizer, which is a 5-1-1, 5 nitrogen, green. Why that? Green, push, green, plant. It's cold weather. You want to push the plants. They don't grow as fast as they do in July. And so whatever the label says, I mean, I would go up to even 8 ounces in a gallon. I mean, this is way more than for one plant. But you really want to kick that thing in the pants because you're striving for the biggest head. And that gives you an opportunity to work the fertilizer also. I mean, it's liquid, so that's cool. And, you know, there are other types of bone meals and things like that are high in nitrogen, but that takes a while to break down. I mean, this is going to get right to the roots really quick. So you hit it hard with water, and that gives you a chance to really spray that inside part of that broccoli and cauliflower, knock any aphids that you can't see, knock them down. And if you can see them, you better come back in a couple days with some insecticidal soap. If you can see the aphids, you got to get in there and start spraying something a little bit nastier than water. So you fertilize and then you just sit and wait. You wait those last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and hopefully it's a big old head.
I love the DRAM siphon jet. I use it on my citrus trees and things. And you could just hook it up to a bucket and then I water the whole darn garden with it. Just, you know, with the little 170 nozzle. Man, it just turns on the veggies.
Yeah.
The fish is just great.
Yeah. And that's a super, I mean, you can get that here. I mean, that's a super easy product to apply. You don't have to scratch it in. It's, and again, your granular organic fertilizers high in nitrogen, they'll take a little while to break down.
My grandfather was a big proponent of fish fertilizer.
Yeah.
For years and years. He used a lot of fish emulsion. It was funny. I can't remember what company it was, but there was one of the fertilizer companies came up with an odorless fish emulsion.
No such thing.
No such thing.
I was wondering
It still stunk. It may not have smelled as bad as regular fish emulsion, but it still stunk.
Yeah.
But.
So in your other insect problems, I mean, when you plant, my rule of thumb, no matter what I plant, I apply a little of the Sluggo Plus. Because the first time I grew a lot of brassicas like 15 years ago, you know, I had a 100-foot row where we'd get 122 plants in there. We planted 18 inches apart. We used drip tape and plant on both sides of the tape in a zigzag fashion. And cutworms could be really nasty. So that's your Lepidoptera worm that lives in the ground. And they come out at night. And if you're up at night, I don't know what you're doing in your garden then. But I came out one day and they're like little cutworms. They'll go about 3 inches up the plant and they'll just cut it.
Cut it off.
Just cut it off and you'll go out there and go, what the hell? And we tried physical barriers such as cut toilet paper rolls and put a 2-inch ring around the plant so the cutworms can't get up. But again, that takes that's a lot of toilet paper. I used to grow about 200 to 300 plants a week of brassicas. That's a lot of toilet paper and it's very time consuming, but Sluggo Plus is great for cutworms. And then also, this is our wet time of the year, and snails and slugs can be a problem. And roly-polies, which are never really a problem, but you're looking for some protection against cutworms eating the whole plant and or just breaking it off. And then somewhere down the line, the cabbage looper, you might see holes in some of the leaves. I've never really had to go to the extent to spray for that, but you can use your typical BT worm killer. You can get it everywhere. It's organic, it's safe. And, but you know, a couple holes in the leaves aren't really going to bother me too much. And I think you could get an epidemic, but,
As long as you catch what's making the holes before
eat it. Yeah. So, and then that's really, and then again, your aphids. So water and insecticidal soap. If you had to go something like neem oil or some suffocant type of oil, it's at least at an advantageous time of the year where, I mean, just be wary of temperatures above 85 degrees. And mm-hmm. I think we're almost over that now.
The one other pest I've had an issue with up in Ramona is earwigs, where you get them literally by the millions. I've gone out at night and you can hear the ground rustling. Earwigs.
And I believe sluggo's good for, it's really good. Good for that too.
They get in the artichokes.
Artichokes are bad news. I've lost a lot of artichokes over the years just because the earwigs get, and once they get into the heads, it's over. You're not going to get them out. So that's one that you have to control. You know, you mentioned sow bugs, and that's one that they typically are, they're not a problem until they're a problem. And one of the things that we see a lot of damage on, especially this time of the year, pansies. They love small pansies. They will go in and they will just mow those things off right at the base. So you need to keep an eye on those.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, not only apply the sluggo there at planting time, but, you know, if it rains, give your plants a little protection, and especially when their heads start to form. Again, you want that big thing and you want to eat all of it.
And Sluggo Plus is great because it is organic. It's basically spinosad and iron phosphate.
Iron phosphate.
Works very well, and it covers a big area.
I've seen some people just dump it on a plant, and no, you didn't. 10 granules around the plant, you're good to go.
I know regular sluggo, it's I think it's 1 pound per 1,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Which that's a 1,000 square feet is a big area. Yeah. I mean, you'd be lucky to get a pound spread over 1,000 square feet.
Bottom line, when it rains, when we get our first torrential rain here in Poway, that's a signal to be wary. I don't know where they come from, but the snails will come. And then maybe 10 days after, give another round of Sluggo or Sluggo Plus or some other organic form of snail bait.
Yeah, if you want to bring slugs and snails out in the springtime, put some hostas in.
Oh, goodness.
Those things.
Some what?
Hosta.
Yeah, hosta. As soon as they sprout in the spring, they get eaten.
They're done. Yeah, they are. I've never seen anything attract slugs and snails like hostas. They're beautiful plants. Absolutely.
Mother Nature gives
plants,
you warnings. Yeah. You just kind of got to listen to it.
You just
got to
keep an eye on it.
Yeah,
keep an eye on it.
And then some of the other brassicas are just the green stuff, you know, collard greens, mustard greens. We talked about kale. Swiss chard is actually not a member of the mustard family, but that's another one where you're picking leaves. So if it doesn't have a head or a big goitrous thing on the stem, you're eating it for the leaves. Mm. And when you go through and cut those first leaves of kale off your plant or Swiss chard, give it a little shot of, you don't have to douse the snot out of it, but, you know, give it a little shot of something high in nitrogen. Why? Because you want green leaves. Green leaves. And every couple of weeks, maybe give another shot. I mean, if you start in September with kale or Swiss chard, you're good for I would say if you're going to grow kale and Swiss chard, the time to get it is in the early part of the whole show, which is September through March. Get it in there so you can get the most out of it. And you don't wait till March to plant your kale and Swiss chard, because then you're just going into powdery mildew weather and all those other things.
Yeah. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements, Adams Bruderer, and our special guest, Farmer Roy, Roy Wilburn. We're talking about winter gardening. You know, during the break, we were talking about it, and one of the things that we thought we should touch on is, I guess you could call it the myth of winter tomatoes.
Yeah, again, I used to grow in Mexico, and our philosophy was try to grow things when you can't. And I could see the idea that planting a winter tomato in November with aspirations or in September to have aspirations of tomatoes by Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a time and place for tomatoes. Again, take advantage of what the fall, winter brassicas and beets and all those things can give you to get you through September, so that when March 1st comes rolling around again, then you can get your tomatoes in. There's no more frosts. There are varieties, Stupas and some other ones.
Glacier.
San Francisco Fog. All with roots from something in Manitoba. Crimea. Yeah, they're like Crimean tomatoes where it's cold all the time. I mean, that's probably the only way they could do it. And they probably grow those in the spring and summer. I would never discourage a person to grow tomatoes, but get them in early, get your indeterminates or determinants in there early. You can plant your tomatoes from March through July here and just play with Mother Nature after that. I
tend to agree. I've tried a couple of different winter tomatoes, and we do carry a few varieties that hardcore people that want to try it. We have some available for them, but for the most part, it's just not worth.
Unless you grow them in your closets with your other stuff.
The return isn't there.
I would much rather have a break of those tomatoes, because the ones growing over the winter get all sorts of blights and things like that. I want that all gone out of the garden.
Yeah.
And so the next spring, there's not old diseases hanging around for the next year.
You know, you get all excited because the weather's nice here in Poway, and it's like November, December, and your tomato plant looks horrible, but it's got some flowers on it, and you just kind of wait, and your cherry tomato plant gives you like 3 cherry tomatoes in February. You would have been much well served keeping a more hygienic garden and by growing some of these other things that come in and out really quick.
Well, you know, speaking of quick and even growing from seed, the true root crops like carrots, beets,
turnips, rutabaga, love rutabaga.
Radishes that we've talked about. They grow radish. If you have kids and you want to grow something in your yard, radishes is one of the. They don't always like them, but man, if you want to see a quick return, radishes will germinate within a couple of days.
Yeah, most definitely. And the seed's fairly manipulatable. You could see the seed, whereas like carrot seed is
pretty fine.
Yeah, but there are seed companies where you can get pelleted seed where, I mean, I've done this with the kids. You know, you got a pack of seeds and it says it's good enough for 250 linear feet of carrots, and you give them the packet and you try to tell them to sprinkle it in, and they go like 5 feet and they're asking for another pack. And then that means somebody has to go back in there and thin them out. And I hate thinning things out. I don't like thinning fruit trees, but it has to be done. But when you got like 500 carrot seeds sprouting in the 4-inch area, then you got to win it. But you get the pelleted seed, you could say, hey, put your finger here, go down about 1/4 inch, put a seed, go to it, 2 finger spacing, give you about 1 inch every inch, put a seed, and then they're off and running, and they're doing really well. And the carrots, I mean, kids love carrots. I mean, they won't even wash them.
And eat them dirt and all.
Yeah. And you got the orange ones, the purple ones, the white ones, and they're yummy. Beets, super easy. You can buy 6 packs here, I'm sure. You could do it from seed, very easy. There's a lot of flower shows in the months of April around here, especially the Poway Valley Garden Club's annual flower show. And I've won lots of blue ribbons with lettuce and beets. And it's
as the inflorescence for the flowers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a little horticultural section that's edibles, and that's kind of the area that I focus on.
Well, that was one of the things that people used to, and we would even recommend it. One used to be popular Queen Anne's lace was
we could
get it from time to time, and it was always very popular. It has the big white sprays of flowers on almost like a mushroom type growth habit to it, but it wasn't always available. But carrots, you let carrots go to seed, makes a good substitute.
It's where carrots came from.
Yeah.
Just a lot of breeding.
And so it. It's a very, very similar. If you're going to let it go, it's a very similar flower. Yeah.
As soon as it starts to show their shoulders, and this goes for beets and radishes, and as soon as you see a little action at the top of the soil, the shoulders starting to peek out, you're ready to rock and roll.
One thing I noticed quite by accident with carrots a number of years ago when I was growing some, if you overfeed them with nitrogen, they get more than one leg on them.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. People have sent me pictures, and that's, yes. I would think that phosphorus is probably something you really want to make sure you got a good phosphorus base in your soil, because that's for roots. I mean, that gives you good roots, and one would assume that that's important. But again, just go with the balance stuff, a 444, your Dr. Earth's, your Demis whatever's. And
it's hard to go wrong, and it's hard to overdo it.
Yeah.
You start getting into, like you said, you start getting into the triple 16s.
Yeah,
the
triple A's. You don't need it.
And you can get into trouble with that.
You definitely want to make sure your soil has got a little tilth to it. I mean, at once you want them to grow underground, wiggle their toes through the ground, you know, don't heavy compacted soil is going to affect size and growing of your rooted vegetables, but
you know what,
break it up.
One of the other leaf crops that I really like is collards.
Collard greens. Mustard greens, again, these are all members of the same family, and again, you're picking it, going out there, and once a week you're picking some leaves off, and every couple of weeks you give a little more fertilizer, and you're going to just keep going until you're sick of it, or something like a powdery mildew takes control. But you know, keep eating it, and let air be your friend.
Yeah. The red leaf Japanese mustards too, added to any salad, I just think they're so delicious.
I've never tried that.
Just spicy, you know, really pop a flavor, that they're excellent, and they're gorgeous in the garden.
Or the Mizuna greens.
Or Mizuna, too. Yeah, oh, that's Mizuna so greens, good.
Yeah, grows so fast.
And then, you know, lettuce.
Yeah.
Everybody eats lettuce. I mean, you should, if your family eats two heads of lettuce a week, plant three, get a six pack. Mm-hmm. Plant three, put the other three to the side. Next week, plant another three, and you really shouldn't have to buy lettuce.
Well, I know with romaine lettuce, Once it starts getting mature, if you're not just ravaging it, you can just go out and pick what you need and leave the plant.
Yeah.
And it'll keep growing.
Yeah.
So you can just keep, you don't have to cut the whole head off all the time. And it'll just keep growing.
Yeah. Yummy stuff.
How about peas? Oh, my favorite thing from the garden in the winter is sugar snap peas, not snow peas, not the shilling, but those good plump sugar snaps. What's the secret?
Kids really like sugar snap peas. And again, that's just soil prep. And you could direct seed those. You don't need to buy plants. It doesn't make much sense. I'm not trying to talk from lack of business, but...
Well, we sell the seed too.
Yeah, seed's the way to go. Seed's the way to go on peas, because, you know, you're going to plant every inch and a half, you're going to put a seed. And, you know, a six pack will get you 4 inches or 6, 8, 9 inches. Yeah. And buy seed. There are the snap peas are definitely probably the most, I mean, not the snap peas, snow peas. Yeah, snap peas are the probably preferred by flavor over I actually like the snow peas, but kids love the snap peas because they're sweet, you know. And you can get their varieties that grow really tall, like 6 feet, And there's actually 2 and 3 foot varieties. Mm-hmm. So there's a more concentrated set, and you can move on and move on and do that various times through the fall and winter. But yeah, that's all super tasty.
A really great variety of the snap peas is the Magnolia.
It's a
beautiful flowers. They taste just as great as any of the other varieties. They're
very pretty. Yeah. I love Cascadia and Sugar Daddy, though. Those are Cascadia is really sweet.
There's Super Sprint, there's Super Sugar Baby, and there's a lot of varieties out there. Mm-hmm.
I like shelled peas too, but
shelled peas.
I like them raw.
Yeah, just a variety right called Penelope, and you can get from online. And those are super yummy. It takes a little work, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's worth it, I think, especially with your mushy peas.
Oh, with the fish and chips. Oh, right.
Yeah. Melanie's she's from England. She's a huge fan of mushy peas.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I went to that place. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
The one on Poway Road?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, Philly. Scripps or,
Phileas Fox. They do fish and chips with mushy peas. Yeah. Mm. So if you need a mushy pea fix, that's
okay.
She says they do a good job. So
we got approval.
It's Melanie approved. So, so this time of the year, don't give up. Don't give up.
No, you're buying time to get to March 1st.
And let's not forget about arugula either.
Oh, arugula. Oh, now, arugula is actually a member of the brassica family. I don't really understand that. And watercress. Now, watercress, we in Mexico, we used to just go out to the streams and pick it, but arugula, people love arugula.
I do.
And it's super easy, man. I was a herb producer in Oceanside for 3 years. And every week we would plant what we call our seeded crops. And that would be cilantro, Italian parsley, arugula, and dill.
Mm.
And this is a great time when it cools, when it's not really hot, that's when your parsley and cilantro grows really nice. And even chervil, which is that's pretty French, not very popular here. but rocket or arugula, super. Mm-hmm. You get a pot, you put some nice dirt in it, you sprinkle some seed, you sprinkle a little dirt on top, water it, and boom, you're in business. In a couple of weeks, you're harvesting baby arugula. Mm-hmm. But
that's so good.
So good.
And it's great raw on a pizza.
Yeah.
Man, I make pizza on a little stone in the barbecue and put prosciutto, and then just put lots and lots of fresh raw arugula, and then a little drizzle of vinaigrette on top of that. Oh, man. my gosh, is that good?
Now I'm going to have to go get something. Roy, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh,
we really
great.
Appreciate it. Get out there and get your winter gardens going, and both of our stores are around to help if you need it. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We'll be back next week with another hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.